Is this thing on?
Word.
This is the Rookie Sports Report, hosted by Matthew Frizzell.
4 runs off the Detroit Tigers, who are the 10th worst in all of baseball.
And Logan Weber.
But this man was swallowed whole by a whale.
Presented by 96.9, 99.9, and AM 1060, ESPN, The Jock.
Everybody love everybody! Come on!
Man, there'd be so much less problems in the world if everyone just loved everybody. Create love, not hate.
True.
Or make love, not hate. That's the word. Either way. Welcome to the Thursday edition of the Rookie Sports Report podcast. Here available on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Google Podcasts. However you're listening. We appreciate you guys listening. Want to give you guys a quick update before we get into any news topics here, sports topics related, or something around those parameters. We won't be podcasting tomorrow because we will be on Sports Talk filling in for Art Haynes and Wyatt Wheeler. And fair warning to all you, even we don't know what's going to happen because, Logan, you're going to be in one part of the state in Skyline, Missouri, and I'm going to be in another part of the state very far from Skyline. I'll be in Carl Junction, so you'll be hooked up there. I'll be hooked up in Carl Junction, and hopefully we can hook up a decent 2-hour show tomorrow on Sports Talk.
That's the plan. You know, it's gonna be
your face, dude.
it's gonna be an interesting dynamic. I'm gonna be, of course, sort of hosting the show via the tie line.
Yeah,
and you'll be on the phone in the car. So you know, it may sound like you're in a war zone in the background of that phone call. But you know, we're gonna try to put together as good a show as we can. I'm already doing a little bit of prep work already for the show tomorrow.
No, nothing wrong with that.
Which is fun because I'm already about 5 or 6 hours deep in prep work for the game I'm calling next tomorrow night, which is Skyline versus Valley Catholic. It's going to be a great game. I guess I didn't realize that Valley Catholic was a Class 3 school now.
Oh, that makes sense. Because we talked about how they were like a Class 1 and 2 school.
They were a Class 1 school in 2019 when they won their last state championship. And then last season they were bumped from Class 1, not to Class 2, but all the way to Class 3.
Good.
Which, I mean, that's because the multiplier for enrollment for private schools went up in 2020 last season. So, I mean, and it is. It's a weird dynamic that is going on because Skyline, which is a Class 1 school, has nearly 150 more kids in their enrollment than Valley Catholic does. Valley Catholic 9 through 12 has like 130 kids in their entire high school. And then Skyline has like 300 kids. It's a really, really weird thing when you look at it. I've got the numbers right here. So Valley Catholic has 130 kids in their entire high school, around that number. Skyline has 220. And Skyline's a Class 1 school, Valley Catholic's a Class 3 school, but the private school dynamic does change things a lot, along with the fact that Skyline has won so many state championships that, you know, maybe they were, right, we should bump you guys up, and then the multiplier bumps you up to Class 3. So,
right.
And they had a lot of success last year. They went 9-2. They lost in the second round of districts, their first time in Class 3, and they lost in the second round of districts to St. Mary's, but they went undefeated in the regular season. They won the I-55 Conference Championship. They played Skyline first game of the year last year, and it was a whooping. Valley Catholic won 48-0. So, hoping for a better matchup this go around. Both of these teams love to score the football.
That's good.
Both teams scored over 42 points a game. So, on top of that, also got a host Sports Talk tomorrow. So, hopefully, we can put together a good enough show and put enough content together for us to survive on the air for 2 hours.
We'll be fine. And just for you, I will not. Roll down my windows and have the air blowing into my car.
That'll
down
be good.
44, even though my air conditioning's busted, but I'll sweat in the car for 2 hours on Sports Talk. But no, it's going to be fine. We're going to be fine.
We'll just wait for commercial breaks, and then you can roll your windows down.
And I'll look like a dog going down 44 because I'm, you know, have tongue out and everything trying to cool down.
Hanging your head out the window.
Exactly. Today's actually National Dog Day, by the way. Did you know that?
Well, no.
It's National, like, Dog Day. My
Happy National Dog Day to all the good boys and good girls out all there, the good puppers.
Is there even a bad boy?
No.
No.
No. There's not a bad dog that exists.
No, sir. They have bad moments, but they're not bad.
All dogs go to heaven, as Lil Wayne says.
That's true. That's very true. But no, I've alluded to this before on the podcast. Whenever my sister is out of town, I take care of her little 4 or 5 year old beagle named Maisie. And she posted a couple of nice pictures of her today on National Dog Day. And to this day, I would rather have a dog than a cat. But like I've also alluded to on this podcast, one day when my mom got back home from Arkansas, she brought home a cat. So
I've been there. I am a dog person through and through. I love dogs. Most of my family is. My dad is a huge cat person, and so is my brother. But myself, my mom, and my sister were dog people. And I'll never forget, I have been begging my fiance for about a year now. Since I knew that I was going to move down here post-graduation and we were going to live together, I wanted a dog. And she kept saying no, she doesn't want a dog living in an apartment, that's a bad place for a dog to live, so on and so forth. Well, I mean, yes, but if they're little, like, I don't want big dog, right? I don't want a freaking Doberman in our apartment. Like, that makes no sense. I'm not a big fan of outdoor dogs either. Just too many variables there with the weather and, you know, if they get out and they get into the street, they get hit by a car that sort of stuff just terrifies me to no end. I don't want to have to be the one to put my dog to sleep or, I mean, whatever the situation calls for if they're in the middle of the road or whatever. But about, I don't know, 10 months ago, right before, it was about November of last year, right before I graduated and we moved in together, I came over to her house because she's got a bunch of outdoor cats around her house. And they weren't theirs, right? They didn't, like, buy the cats and then put them outside. But they just had these cats start showing up around their house, and they started feeding them and putting food back on the back porch and stuff. And eventually, one of these cats got pregnant and had kittens. And then shortly after, the other cat got pregnant and had kittens. And I went over to their house one night, her parents' house, and they had a bunch of these cats sitting on their back porch. They had made, like, this little, like, living space area for them and everything for these little kittens so that they didn't get out and, you know, deal with the living out in the country and stuff, the variables of living out in the quote-unquote wild,
yeah,
so to speak. And, you know, I'm looking at all these cats because her niece, my fiance's niece, wanted me to go look at all these kittens. And, you know, she's 5, almost 6 years old now, her niece is, and she's the cutest thing on the planet. So when she tells you she wants you to go do something, you're going to go do it.
Right.
So I'm going and I'm looking at all these kittens, and my fiance's mom comes out and she's pointing out all these cats and, oh, aren't they so cute? And, you know, I'm asking them, like, so she walks up to me and she's like, oh, this one's name is Mahomes. And I'm like, oh, okay, like after Patrick Mahomes,
growing yeah, sure.
in Kansas City area, right? And so I start asking, like, what the names of the other kittens are. And she's like, oh, well they don't have names. This cat doesn't have a name. That cat doesn't have a name. I was like, well, why does this one have a name and those don't have names? And she's like, well, we don't want to get attached to the other ones. And I'm like, so why does this one have a name? Well, then my fiance looks at me and she goes, oh, this is Mahomes. We're taking him back to Springfield with us. I was like, oh, so we got a cat and I didn't even know about it? Oh, that's cool. And so I've been sort of badgering her. I'm like, you know, one of these times you're going to go back home, back to our hometown to work, and you're going to come back after a couple of days, and I'm just going to have a dog. There's just going to be a dog in the apartment. It's just going to happen. And, you know, of course, she's like, well, don't do that. I was like, well, you did that to me, right? Well, cats make more sense in an apartment environment
That's
than a dog
true,
does.
Because they're low maintenance. They don't need a lot. Yeah, I live in a duplex with my mother, and, yeah, cats are really, really low maintenance, really easy to work with. And
cats are mean.
That's true.
They cats are mean. Just don't care about anything.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's you don't see videos of a dog up on the countertop just knocking over glass, like, glasses, you know, like,
yeah, but you see dogs chew up couches.
I mean, yeah, dogs chew up,
and
but
doing
like
a lot of things.
But like, if you're sick,
eating my homework.
If you're sick, your cat is not gonna care.
Oh no, he does
but
not
your,
care.
Your dog will walk over there and like,
you know what your cat will care about? Whenever you're sick is whenever they are gonna get fed.
Exactly. They meow, meow, and like my cats, the cats that my parents have, we've got three. My parents have three cats, and they will like wake up at 7 o'clock in the morning and start like biting my parents' face.
Ouch.
And are like scratching at my parent, or like biting my dad's eyebrows. Like, hey man, wake up and feed me. All right, man, I'm starving to death. All right. And these cats are freaking massive. Like, we've got a cat that's easily, it's got to be 20 pounds.
Huh?
Like a legit 20 pound cat. I mean, like heavier than the dogs we had. It's insane. And we just got a new puppy and her name's Izzy. She's the cutest thing on the planet. And I don't know. I'm a dog person. And I'm craving getting a new dog ever since my dog passed.
Yeah.
A few months ago.
Yeah. I've always wanted a German Shepherd dog. I know it's probably not the best environment for him to be in like a duplex or an apartment, but God, I love German Shepherds. They're so cute. They're so intelligent. That's why most of them are like canine dogs or whatever for police forces. Most of my TikTok is just filled with German Shepherd videos and everything. And to elaborate on your point about the cats, yeah, my cat will do literally the same thing. I'll be up at like 4 a.m. Trying to get ready for my workout at 5. And the damn thing will be like meowing at me, wanting me to feed him. She's like, you should be sleeping, because like he's meowing loud and my mother's sleeping because, you know, she's a normal person. She doesn't wake up at 4 a.m. to work out at 5.
Fair.
So he's just meowing and I'm just like, shh, you need to be in bed or whatever. So
I'm not going to lie. I don't know how you do it. I really don't. I mean, I work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday here at the studio 6 to 10.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually go home and, of course my fiance just started graduate school this week, in-person classes on Monday. So we usually try to go to bed about midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. And it takes everything I have to get up at 9 a.m. Like it legit, like today I wasn't getting up at 9 a.m. My alarm went off at 9 a.m. And yeah. I said, set that for 10 a.m. now, go back to sleep for another hour. And that's exactly what I did. Woke up at about 10, you know, scrolled on my phone for about 15 minutes, crawled out of bed, put on a shirt and shorts and a hat. And I was like, all right, time to go to work.
Good enough, yeah.
That'll work for me.
But no, see, the thing is that I wake up that early. You got to go to bed that early. So I go to bed at like 6, 7 at night. And I'll be honest, it's a bit depressing, but so was weighing damn near 400 pounds at 21 years old. Now I'm down to 253 now here today. And I'm actually approaching the 1 year anniversary when I actually started losing weight. So something to be somewhat excited about. All right. Enough personal stories about our cats and dogs and loves for them about because it is National Dog Day. First things first, a big headline from yesterday involving the NCAA basketball or just NCAA basketball in general. And I know you're a huge diehard of that. Amani Bates, a top three recruit, has committed to Memphis. Logan, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, he's a guy I'm sort of thrilled by the fact that he's going to Memphis as a fan of a school in the Big Ten not named Michigan State. He was originally like a Michigan State commit, mm-hmm. and at the time he was like the number one recruit in the class of 2022, or class of 2021, excuse me, and that's changed now. And so that's pretty nice to have to not have to deal with him in the Big Ten this year. Michigan State's a team that's usually been pretty good year in and year out. And with Amani Bates on their roster, they might have gotten back to what we saw in the early to mid 2000s, and when they were going to Final Fours and national championship games and so on. They lose him. He goes to Memphis and just, you know, Penny Hardaway doing what he does again. Memphis is a school with a large basketball pedigree. Penny Hardaway himself went to Memphis. Of course, when John Calipari was the coach at Memphis, guys like Derrick Rose, they had a lot of success. Went to a national championship game, lost to Kansas in that 2008 national championship game. Shout out to my brother Coleman, who's a giant Kansas fan. He's very thrilled whenever that gets brought up in any conversation that Kansas won the championship in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
So him going to Memphis, I think, is a good fit. He's, 6'8", 200-pound, small forward, but he plays a little bit like a guard, plays a very similar game to what we saw from Penny Hardaway when he was at Memphis and in the NBA with the Magic and the Suns. So I think it could be a great fit for him and help him develop. I was a little bit surprised, though, because when he decommitted from Michigan State, there was a lot of news cycles and a lot of people reporting that there was a strong chance that he was going to end up going the G League route,
yeah,
like we saw from some guys in this year's draft class, including the number two overall pick in the NBA draft this year. What was his name?
That's a good question, because I really didn't pay attention to this year's draft. I knew about Jalen Suggs, I believe, because he went to Gonzaga.
But there were a couple of guys that went the G League route and played for the G League Ignite in the G League this year rather than going the college route because it got him a chance to get paid. It was Jalen Green, who went number two overall.
Jalen Green, yeah.
Yeah, and he's thought to be, like, the best scorer in this draft class, but wasn't quite the talent all around that Cade Cunningham was out of Oklahoma State. So I'm excited to see how this pans out. And, you know, I'm excited for Memphis as well and Penny Hardaway because they're finally getting an opportunity with a guy that is a top five, top three recruit, depending on what site you look at. ESPN has him at number three. 24/7 Sports has him as either the number four or the number five player in the class. They finally get a chance to have a guy on their roster that is more than likely going to play a full season because they got screwed a couple of years ago when they got the number one overall recruit in the class in James Wiseman, and then he just didn't get to play because of rule violations and amateurism and blah, 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 blah. Well, that's
NCAA
out the window
BS.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's out the window now with the NIL, and I'm excited to see what Memphis is able to do with a full season, what Penny Hardaway is able to do with a guy like this, being able to develop him over the course of a full season and see how that translates into helping this program win now and possibly win later, because this is a Memphis program that's had a lot of success, but none really that's been very tangible since John Calipari left for Kentucky after that 2008-2009 run.
Indeed. Yeah, looking forward, and hopefully Memphis, it's kind of in the vicinity of where we are. They do well, and for Imani Bates being there, Penny Hardaway doing what he's doing over there, all signs are pointing up for that Memphis College. All right, switching gears now to the NFL. Talked about this a little bit earlier. Titans put Tannehill on COVID-19 list, and of course, a couple of wide receivers as well from the Buffalo Bills are now on the COVID list and have been, I believe, fined as well by the NFL for breaking protocol.
Yes. So Isaiah McKenzie and Cole Beasley both were
shocking.
Fined. They was disclosed that they were fined on today, with today being Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
The fine was about $14,000, a little bit over, about $14,500. And of course, this is something Cole Beasley has been very vocal about, the COVID-19 vaccine and the no masking and all that stuff. But you know, when your bosses say you need to do something,
probably should do it.
You should probably do it, especially if you're getting paid millions of dollars. And so they, both of those guys receive fines. This is not the first instance that these guys have been warned by the NFL. The NFL warned them in late July about them not wearing masks and all these sorts of things. So this is not something that just came out of the blue for them. They've had multiple warnings from the NFL, letters being sent to them, actual members of the NFL coming to them and saying, hey, like, you need to follow the rules, otherwise you're going to get fined. Warning them about what was to happen if they didn't follow the guidelines. And, of course, they didn't. Reports of them in the indoor facility, in training sessions, in the weight room, after offensive meetings, not wearing masks, being seen without masks on, surrounded in close contact with other players. Both guys are unvaccinated, so they're required to wear masks, considering they aren't vaccinated.
Yeah.
And they chose not to do so anyway, so they were fined. The NFL saying they will continue to get fined and the fines will get progressively more severe and if they choose not to follow the rules. So you've got two choices if you're Isaiah McKenzie and Cole Beasley. I guess three if you really want to think about it. One, you can either wear your mask when you're supposed to be wearing your mask. Okay? That's number one. Number two, you get vaccinated. Okay? Those are the two easiest options for you. Or the third option is you're going to continue to get fined, and you're going to lose more and more and more money. Okay, yeah, $14,000 doesn't sound like a whole lot for you right now. Yes, but you know, this one might be $14,000. The next one might be $30,000. The one after that might be $80,000. And then eventually you're losing six figures in fines because you're unwilling to follow the rules. Like a child that's being told to keep your hands to yourself in a kindergarten classroom and not eat crayons. Okay? That's the equivalent of what these guys are doing. They're throwing a fit. They're straight up throwing a hissy fit because they just they don't want to follow the rules. And you know, it's one of those things that I love it when parents or when adults yell at kids for not following the rules, but adults turn around and they're the worst ones of all because they refuse to listen to the rules of anybody, people much smarter than them. And I mean, that's why I don't get it, okay? Like Isaiah McKenzie and Cole Beasley trying to say that they're trying to say or show that they're smarter than those in the front office of the NFL or, you know, doctors and scientists throughout the world. Like, you're not, okay? These people know what they're talking about. They know what they're doing, okay? They're not doing it to inconvenience you. They're doing it to keep you, your friends, your family, your teammates safe, and you choose to just throw a fit and not follow the rules.
Yeah, it's crazy. Because whenever they're making that decision, they're not just harming themselves but harming others. I saw a story today, a local story, actually in my hometown of Ozark, Missouri, which is about a suburb 10, 15 minutes away from Springfield. A kid that worked at a local store in Ozark, Apple Markets, died today because of complications from COVID-19.
Mm.
16 years old. Like, you know, I know we're beating a dead horse here, but this stuff's scary, dude. Like, I wasn't that scared of it before the Delta variant, but now afterwards, I'm vaccinated. I'm not scared of it now, and I wasn't beforehand. But with what's going on, you have to do whatever you need to do to protect yourself, whether that's getting the vaccine or if you don't have the vaccine, wearing a mask. And I know the people like Cole Beasley will make the argument that it's interfering with your freedom. No, it's not. We're trying to interfere with you being healthy, with others being healthy. Because whether you like it or not, you have to do things in life that you don't want to do. You got to do things in life that the boss, whoever that is, a manager, your parents, whatever, you got to do stuff in life that you don't want to do. And taking a vaccine is one of the more simpler things that you could do to curb the spread of this, and yet you don't want to do it. It's insane. It really is. And look, I may sound like a hypocrite because I was on the other side of this aisle about 4 or 5 months ago. But you can change your opinion if you don't fully know about the topic. Don't look at something. Don't look at a headline and be already, you know, opinionated on it. Don't be opinionated on something you don't know, period. That's just a general rule of life. If you don't know anything about something, don't voice your opinion about it. Please, on Twitter or Facebook or whoever or whatever. That was a miniature therapy session Thursday there. And we will get to that later on in the podcast. And I have something that's completely out of the ordinary I guess it isn't out of the ordinary, but what we just talked about compared to what we just talked about, it's out of the ordinary. All right, switching gears over to baseball. First off, St. Louis Cardinals last night in front of a capacity crowd of 26,000 or 23,000, though I think that number is total BS. I could count on my hand the number of fans that I saw on the TV screen. St. Louis Cardinals last night, or yesterday afternoon, excuse me, won against the Detroit Tigers 3-2 in 10 innings. And I'll tell you what, man, if I am Alex Reyes for the St. Louis Cardinals in his past two appearances, I'd be buying Lars Nootbaar a big old steak dinner at the finest establishment of where we're at right now. Because the last two times Alex Reyes has been in, he's been saved by Lars Nootbaar. Lars Nootbaar should have gotten the save and the win in the past two times Alex Reyes has been pitching. First game, I believe it was against Detroit or the opponent previous. It was against the Pirates. Last game against the Pirates, Alex Reyes lets the first two guys get on, and then Colin Moran hits a deep drive to right field, and Nootbaar makes just an incredible catch in right field to end the game, in which the Cardinals won, I believe, 3-0, but it could have been a lot worse if Lars Nootbaar had not made that catch. Okay, now fast forward to yesterday afternoon. Cardinals at one point are up 2-0. They get up a run in the fifth, 2-1. Okay. It is what it is. Alex Reyes comes in. Gives up the lead. Detroit ties it with two outs, by the way, in the ninth inning. Miguel Cabrera doubled, and then Harold Castro drove Miguel Cabrera in with a single. Game was tied at 2. All right, head to extras. Cardinals have the bases loaded with 2 out, I believe. Guess who got the game-winning hit? The candy bar himself, Lars Nootbaar. Saved the game for the Cardinals. TJ McFarland, in essence, got the win. But, in all seriousness, Lars Nootbaar got the win for the St. Louis Cardinals. And they needed that. Because if they would have lost to the Tigers, if they would have lost 4 straight to the Detroit Tigers, what I ranted about a month or so ago about the Cardinals against the Tigers back on Therapy Session Thursday, nonetheless, wouldn't have compared to the amount of explosiveness and angerness I would have shown today. But thankfully, excuse me, they won 1-3-2. Now they'll begin a series with the Pittsburgh Pirates tonight, and hopefully we'll have better luck than what they did in St. Louis. Pittsburgh took 2 out of 3 in St. Louis, but the Cardinals now up for 4 in Pittsburgh starting today. I believe Mitch Keller will go for the Pittsburgh Pirates, and I'm drawing blanks as to who the starter is for the Cardinals. Miles Michaelis, he'll be starting for the St. Louis Cardinals.
So I found this very interesting yesterday, a couple of different things. So, you know, Alex Reyes has struggled in the last 2 months.
That's an understatement.
So if you look back early in the year, in the month of April, he pitched 12 and a third innings and didn't allow a single run. He did not allow a single earned run in the month of April in 12 and a third innings pitched. In the month of May, in 15 and two-thirds innings pitched, he allowed 2 earned runs for a 1.15 ERA in the month of May. In the month of June, he had a 1.86 ERA in 9 and two-thirds innings pitched. He gave up 2 earned runs. Since July, he's got an ERA of over 5.5. In the month of July, he gave up 6 earned runs in 10 innings pitched. And in the month of August so far, he's given up 6 earned runs in 9 innings pitched. And frankly, it's because, I mean, the guy has been overworked. I mean, to say the least, he's got 56 and two-thirds innings pitched on the year. He's faced 250 batters. I mean, that's a pretty extensive number for a relief pitcher. He doesn't have bad stats on the year. He's got a 2.54 ERA. So if you look at the season as a whole, he's pitched particularly well. But since July, since around All-Star, it just has not been going well for him. You know, he got off to a hot start in the first 3 months of the year and has just taken an absolute nosedive since July 2nd. And that's, I should say July 4th. And it hasn't panned out well for him at all. Now, it hasn't really bit him too much. I suppose he's got 28 saves on the year, but he's also got 3 blown saves. And then taking a look at it last night, and maybe it's not being discussed quite as much as I believe it should be, Paul Goldschmidt had his best game of the year. He had 2 home runs, multiple home run game, and he scored the 3rd run of the game that won it for the Cardinals in the bottom of the 10th inning on that Lars Nootbaar hit. So it's his first multi-home run game of the season. He now has 3 home runs in the Cardinals' last 3 games. So maybe the trend is turning a little bit for Paul Goldschmidt. I don't know. And like you said, John Lester pitched a great game, 5 full, only 1 run allowed. And the bullpen absolutely shut the door, aside from Alex Reyes allowing that 1 run. The rest of the bullpen was lights out. Struck out a combined 4 in the final 4 innings of the game. They pitched well.
Indeed. Yeah, I mean, and you talk about Goldschmidt. This has basically been his career trend. Let's be honest here. He'll start slow, but like every veteran does, he'll figure out, he'll adjust what the pitchers are adjusting him to, and he just starts turning into the Paul Goldschmidt that played for Arizona and was quietly one of the top 5 players in the National League. So looking forward to that. Hopefully, Arenado can follow suit because he's had somewhat of a downstretch this past August, and maybe he'll turn around in September when the Cardinals need him the most. All right, yesterday in the YouTube game of the week, by the way, the
kids... I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, MLB once a week will give this like YouTube game of the week or something like that where you can watch it for free, and they'll have like their own broadcast and everything. I believe Jeremy Guthrie was one of the color commentators for the Royals, former Royal great. And
met Jeremy Guthrie on multiple occasions.
Awesome. He's a tall guy.
He is tall. He's like 6'3". But he's a good dude, too.
I bet, yeah. But one of the more fiery competitors in Royals history. And, of course, he was a part of that 2015 championship team. But anyway, digressing from that, another extra innings game, but unfortunately not in favor of the Missouri team. The Astros win it 6-5 and take 2 out of 3 against the Royals. In Houston, nonetheless, Salvador Perez homered again. And Whit Merrifield hit a grand slam, but not enough offense, not good enough pitching, I should say, for the Royals yesterday in Houston.
Yeah, and, you know, first things first is maybe I need to just stop trying to hype up Royals players. Because earlier this week, I was talking very highly of Nicky Lopez and Domingo Tapia. Well, that bit me in the butt last night. Nicky Lopez went 0-for-4 with 2 strikeouts, and Domingo Tapia pitched just 2/3 of an inning and allowed an earned run before he was replaced by Richard Lovelady. So that's not great. Not great at all. But, you know, we got some good performances. Salvador Perez hit home run number 34, which puts him now tied for third in Major League Baseball with Fernando Tatis for most home runs in Major League Baseball. He's now tied for the 5th most home runs in a single season by an American League catcher in ever. So that's very nice. Whit Merrifield went vintage 2-hit Whit last night, including a grand slam, which led to 4 RBIs for the 32-year-old, you know, second baseman, shortstop, left fielder, right fielder, center fielder, third baseman,
utilities,
just straight up do it all aside from pitch and catch sort of guy. Although he did play second base last night. Michael Taylor and Hunter Dozier each had multi-hit games. They had 2 hits apiece. And then not another Royals player had a hit. So those 4 guys each hit the ball well, and then the other 5 went over.
Didn't show up.
Not great. Not great at all. Joel Piamps. I don't know. Piamps.
Dude, I've tried so many times to pronounce.
No idea how to pronounce that name. You know, I'll give myself a little bit of a benefit of the doubt, considering it's just his 3rd appearance in a Royals uniform after being traded from Seattle around the deadline. So, or from the Blue Jays, excuse me.
Yeah, Toronto.
Me. Yeah, or from the Toronto Blue Jays. So, I mean, it is what it is. Home runs were the story of the game last night. 4 of them hit, 2 by each team, which led to 7 of the 11 runs that were scored during the course of the game. Mike Minor struggled again. 6 full innings, he allowed 3 earned runs, including...
That's a quality start, though.
It is, but he allowed 2 home runs, and it's one of those things that he only pitched 6 innings, and he allowed 3 earned runs.
That's a quality start, though.
Yeah, that's a run every other inning, though. So if you think about
like
that, that's...
If you're a starter in today's game and you limit teams to only 3 runs throughout 2/3 of the game, I feel like you should get a win or a quality start.
I suppose, but if just think about if he that's a 4.5 ERA. That's not very good. I don't know how that qualifies as a quality start. Now, if you allowed like 2 earned runs and 6 innings pitched, I can understand that, but. And 2 of them were solo home runs that you gave up. So another instance where Mike Minor appears in a game and allows 2 earned runs or more, which has been sort of his calling card over the last month and a half or so. It's just one of those things. But I want to turn towards a positive trend, and it's something that I've been hammering on more and more. And I feel like Royals fans and Royals radio and news writers and stuff are doing. And that's turning towards the minor league system. And I'm very upset with myself because I hyped up Bobby Witt Jr. and Nick Prado and Kyle Isbell earlier this week for the way that they've been performing. You should, right? I mean, Bobby Witt is batting .299 with 11 home runs and seven stolen bases in 32 games in AAA in Omaha. He's also got 12 doubles. In 32 games, he had 11 doubles in 61 games in AA. He had 16 home runs in 61 games in AA and batted .295. So his pace in AAA, he's hitting better in AAA than he was in AA. Now, yes, it's in half as many games, so the sample size is a little bit smaller, but that's something to get excited about. Same thing with Nick Prado. He hit 271 in 15, and he hit 271 with 15 home runs in 61 AA games. In 32 AAA games, he has 11 home runs, and he's batting 281. Batting average is up 10. He's on a better pace in terms of home runs as well. So that is an exciting thing to think about. But a guy that I really failed to mention and I'm kicking myself about, and he might be a guy I'm more excited about than anybody in the Royals minor league, in the farm system, and that's MJ Melendez. He's 22 years old and a catcher, I should mention, for this Royals team. He was another one of those guys. He was called up during that flurry of people that were brought up from AA, Northwest Arkansas, to AAA, Omaha, and the Storm Chasers. He is a power bat. I mean, through and through, a straight-up power bat. In 92 games with AA, or 92 minor league games this season, he has 31 home runs and a 276 batting average. That's a pretty exciting thing to think about. And he's got great plate discipline. He's got an on-base percentage this year of 365. But he's still trying to get acclimated in Omaha. He's not batting nearly as well in Omaha or hitting for as much power in Omaha as he was in Northwest Arkansas. He had 28 home runs in Northwest Arkansas. In 13 games in AAA Omaha, he's got 13 home runs, and he's batting like 209.
Still, 13 home runs in 13 games is...
He's got three home runs.
Oh, three.
Three, yeah.
Three.
So 31 on the year. He had 28 in Northwest Arkansas. Oh. He's got three home runs in 13 games.
Not a math major. I thought you said
Omaha.
13.
My bad. I might have said 13. That might be my bad. But he's a guy that, if he can get called up to the majors sooner rather than later, maybe midway through the season next year or the following season from that, maybe opening day 2023... The sooner he can get acclimated and get to the major league level, that's something that is really going to help out Salvador Perez.
Oh, yeah.
We've talked about Salvi and how much longer he can continue to play at a high level in Major League Baseball. Well, if NJ Melendez can get called up sooner rather than later, Salvador Perez no longer has to be the everyday catcher. You can give the catcher role to NJ Melendez, who has shown that is a great fielder. His fielding percentage this year is 98.3. And he has shown flashes of great throwing ability from behind the plate. In High A Wilmington in 2019, which at that time it was Advanced A Wilmington, which Wilmington isn't even an affiliate of the Royals anymore, but they were in 2019 when he was with them.
Before the minor league purge, yeah.
The Wilmington Blue Rocks, I want to say, was
Blue
their
Rocks
name?
Or Blue Sox.
Something like that.
Yeah.
There, he had 60 players attempted to steal on him during that 2019 season. Only 24 of them actually stole bases. He threw out 36 runners out of 60 in 2019 in Advanced A Wilmington, High A Wilmington. So the talent is there in terms of throwing ability. That's something to get excited about. Not only for the development in him and the future of your position at catcher, but that also allows Salvador Perez to really take a step back, both physically and mentally, being able to understand that, hey, all I've got to do at now is step into the box and mash home runs. Think about it. He has played in 90 games this season, around 90 games as a catcher, and hit 34 home runs. Now, think about the fact that he only has to play 120 or 140, 150 games as just a designated hitter for the next 3 or 4 years. That's going to help Salvador Perez be able to elongate his career over the next 3 to 4 to 5 seasons and continue to just hit home runs. And that's really, really going to help his statistics in terms of his batting, because he's able to really, really focus on the mental and physical aspect of just being a hitter, rather than having to worry about catching. And that's only going to make him better from in the box hitting the baseball.
Yeah, I totally agree. And also, I could see him, you know, what you're talking about here is kind of similar, and I just pulled up his stats, to what Minnesota did with Joe Mauer. I mean, think about it. You're talking about one of the best hitting catchers if he stayed healthy of all time.
Yeah, and Joe Mauer wasn't as he was more of a contact batter.
Yeah,
that
I
he
know.
Wasn't as much of a power bat as Salvi is. So I don't know if that makes there a distinction, but yeah, if he can continue a trend the way Joe Mauer did, I am super cool with that,
dude.
A Joe 306 Mauer, career batting average in 15 seasons,
2,123 hits as a catcher in only 15 years. Man, if Joe Mauer could have stayed healthy just a little bit longer, played a little bit longer, he could be one of the only catchers to hit that 3,000 hit marker. But yeah, hell, I can even go as far as to say is that they'll put him at first base because really. You don't, I mean, yeah, Nick Prado's on his way up, but you really don't have that many options at first base. Good quality options, I should
yeah,
say.
Yeah, I mean, frankly, I don't think Salvi would play first base. I think he'd be a designated hitter sure. because I think Nick Prado is going to be in the majors before MJ Melendez is. I don't yeah. know if it's maybe
hopefully
a year.
Hopefully he develops.
Maybe
there.
A year, half a year
yeah.
before Melendez ends up there. But, I mean, I just continue to get more excited about this Royals team in the future. With what we're seeing from Nicky Lopez, you know, and hopefully it really comes down to can these guys live up to the potential that they're being set up for to what we're seeing from them? Hopefully they can, like what we saw from the guys during that 14, 15, 16 run for the Royals with Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas being called up and generating a lot of success. Alcides Escobar and Lorenzo Cain, when they were brought in via that trade with Milwaukee for Zach Greinke, maybe they can reach that semblance of success. I don't know. But it's Melendez being called up early is only going to help Salvi. So think about that. Salvador Perez is your DH. MJ Melendez catching. Prado at first base. Nicky Lopez at second. Adalberto Mondesi at shortstop. You've got Bobby Witt Jr. playing third, theoretically. He can play third. He could be your third baseman. Whit Merrifield playing right field / center field. Whoever
Isbell playing somewhere
yeah,
in the outfield.
Kyle
position.
Isbell, Eric Pena, center field. You know, Isbell more than Pena. Pena's still really young and playing rookie ball right now at 18 years old. And then Andrew Benintendi in left field. That could be a very, very good baseball team.
I think you got to sign Benintendi to an extension at some point.
Yeah, and I'm sure they will. He's batting around 270 this season. He's 26 years old.
There's
he's still
a lot
got,
of upset with Benintendi,
still got a lot
though.
Of time to develop. You know, he had, as a, you know, growing up in Kansas City, I'm a Royals fan. I root for the Royals, but I'm also a Red Sox fan. So I'm probably a little bit more... I probably have a little bit more knowledge about Andrew Benintendi than maybe some
the
Royals fans
Royal fan. Yeah.
do. He was a guy that had a lot of hype when he was in the Red Sox farm system.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he had success in Boston.
Early
and,
on.
You know, he betted, yeah, I mean, he was, at 21 years old, he was in the majors. Betted 295 in 34 games in his first year with the Red Sox, and then in his second season, he was a full-time starter, played in 151 games, batted 271, and then batted 290 in 2018. In 2019, he batted 266. He's not a power bat by any means. His career high is 20 home runs, and that he hit in 2017 in his first full season of Major League Baseball. But he's a good contact hitter, and you know the Red Sox got rid of him for a head scratching. I don't really understand why.
Yeah, Franchy Cordero for Andrew Benintendi, one for one.
He only played in 14 games in 2020 because of the COVID shortened season, and he was injured. And yeah, okay, he batted 103.
But that's
he
just, only played it's a shortened season.
He
though.
Played in 14 games. That's an absolute. You throw that out the window. He only played in 14 games. How can you put any stock in that? And then you trade him straight up for a minor leaguer.
I don't know.
I just don't get it. I don't get it. And, you know, maybe for the Royals, that's a good thing. Maybe you fleece the Red Sox out of it. But at 26 years old, he still has time to develop. I mean, we've seen it, right? I mean, Whit Merrifield wasn't even in the majors till he was 27, 28 years old. And he's been a 300 batter. So
two-hit Whit, yeah.
He's been a 300 batter. So it can continue to progress if you're Andrew Benintendi. And that's something to be even more excited about if you're the Royals.
You know, honestly, if Aaron Judge didn't have a historic rookie season, like one for the ages, Benintendi would have won. 2017, he batted 271, hit 20 home runs, drove in 90, which is really good. Usually when you think of guys hitting home run, or guys that hit home runs, they're thinking, all right, 20 home runs, he's got to have, you know, like, you know, 60, 70 RBIs. He had 90 RBIs for the Red Sox.
Walked 70 times.
And he stole 20 bases. A 20-20 club is pretty hard.
Yeah.
In my opinion. I know it's not as rare, obviously, as a 30-30 club or even a 40-40 club. But if you're hitting 20 bombs and stealing 20 bases a season, you're doing something right. Now, this season, he, like you said, he has somewhat declined, batting 260, on base at 307. He hasn't played in as many games. I believe at some point he was on the IL, or maybe a couple times he was on the IL. But has hit 12 home runs, drove in 43. He's stolen 8 bases, and I find this funny. He's been caught stealing 8 times, which leads all of baseball. But, you know, the Royals are a team that runs rampant, and he has good speed. Like I just said, stole 20 bases in 2017, stole 21 the season afterwards, in which he batted 290. So, yeah, there's a lot of upside for Benintendi, and I'm looking forward to see how he does in a Royals uniform and what the Royals have in store in the future.
Yeah, there's a lot of promise between, like I said, Benintendi, Whit Merrifield, or not about Whit Merrifield, Bobby Witt, Nick Prado, MJ Melendez, Kyle Isbell, and then that pitching staff as well, which, you know, over the last month or so has shown a lot of promise with Daniel Lynch and Brady Singer and Brad Keller, Jacob Junis, and guys in the minor league system, Jackson Cower, Asa Lacy. There's a lot that you can be excited about if you're a Royals fan, but you have to just sort of ignore the fact that this season is not over yet for the Royals.
Yeah. Not there yet. Patience is a virtue, which is something Cardinal fans have limited amounts of. All right. You know what we don't test patience on here? Therapy Session Thursday. We have zero patience with Therapy Session Thursday because we've been patient enough. We've been holding this topic, this feeling in the pit of our stomach for the past 2 days, past 3 days. Could have been yesterday we figured out our Therapy Session Thursday topic. But today, we let it all out. It's a safe space. We let out all of our grievances, our emotions. It's a safe space here in the Jock Studio. We air it all out. All right, Logan, what do you got for this Therapy Session Thursday here on the Rookie Sports Report podcast?
You know, it's something that, you know, I've been in a pretty good mood this week, and I haven't really had a ton of issues, you know, but I've got two things that are really starting to bug me, and one of them I was going to use for my Therapy Session Thursday, but I decided to go not to. I just want to talk about it briefly. You know, the new Madden game is good. It is. It's good.
Okay.
But, like, why is it so slow? Like, it takes everything forever to load. The opening packs and stuff in Madden Ultimate Team is straight up hot garbage. It takes forever. Everything takes so long to load. It's so, like the ease of use is not there with this game. Now, when you're in the game and you're actually playing, like, in-game, right, with something, that's fine. And even that's a little bit slow, but maybe that's just because, you know, you're early in Madden Ultimate Team and the guys are really slow. Like, the fastest guy in the game right now is, like, in 90 speed.
Sure.
So, like, the players are just naturally pretty slow right now, so maybe that's part of it. But, my goodness, like, the menus and stuff and, like, getting in and out of stuff and the game loading up, and it's just slow. And I don't understand why, at this point, these, like, the games are getting, like, Madden is getting slower and less ease of use than in years past. And I just, it leaves me scratching my head. But here's something that, you know, maybe isn't worthy of me getting upset, but and this has everything to do with the game that I'm calling tomorrow, Skyline versus Valley Catholic. Okay, so I'm doing game prep last night and the night before, and I'm looking at, you know, trying to find articles about the Skyline football team this year and so on and so forth. And I found like 3 or 4 good articles, including one written by the Ozark Sports Zone that was, excuse me, like 4 pages long.
Shout out Ozone, by the way, but yeah, go ahead.
It had a ton of information for you, and I was able to get a ton of notes about the Skyline football team. And then I spent the better part of an hour trying to find articles about Valley Catholic football. It shouldn't take me an hour to find an article or two about a team that is tied for the most state championships in the history of the state of Missouri in football. They've got 15 state championships, including 7 since 2010. Why does it take me an hour to find 2 articles? And then when I find those 2 articles, I can't read them without paying a $10 monthly subscription just to get into the article. So what did I have to do last night? Because I needed to have information about this Valley Catholic football team, I had to pay $10 to read these 2 articles and get, like, I don't know, a page or a page and a half of game notes for this thing I'm doing tomorrow. I was so angry about it. And then what did I do? Right? I read the articles. I put the information into my Google Doc here, right? Correct? Just so I could print off my game notes. And then what do? I go back into that same website to cancel my subscription. I paid $10 for an hour
of article reading.
Yes, and nobody else had anything. Like the St. Genevieve newspaper. Nothing. Like nothing. Like, what do you mean? The school is in St. Genevieve. It is the best football program in your city. It is the best football program around St. Louis in terms of success. Yes, St. Louis has got some great programs. John Burroughs, stuff like, right? I mean, like, you know, I know what John Burroughs, I know who Ezekiel Elliott is, right? Like, I know that St. Louis has a ton of success. They have a ton of football and they have a ton of talent in that area.
Right.
But why is nobody writing about Valley Catholic except for this random and this random site that I have to pay a $10 subscription to read this online article? I just don't get it. I don't get why a program with that much success is being ignored, I guess. And maybe it's just because, like, they didn't win a state championship last year because they were moved up 2 classes from class 1 to class 3 for a school that has 120 kids. You know, here's something wild that I found out yesterday. So this is a school, and, you know, I did just mention that the Skyline has about 220 kids in their school, and Valley Catholic has about 130, right? Here's something that boggles my mind. Skyline has 220 kids in their school. They have 24 kids on their football team. Valley Catholic has 130 kids, 48 on the football team. More than a third of the kids that go to their high school are on the football team. That is the level of respect and success that that football program has had. That literally 40% of the school plays football. That's insane. And yet, 2 articles were written about them from an online publication that I had to pay a $10 subscription just to spend an hour on these 2 articles for my game notes. Dumb. And I hate it, and it pisses me off.
First off, I applaud you for going to that length of depth to broadcast a game for 2.5 hours. You said you put in, what, 6 hours of note time or whatever?
Yeah, five and a half, 6 hours worth of game prep.
I'll max, like, put in, like, 3, 3.5. Though my game notes aren't probably as big as yours. I'll give, like, an overview of the team, like, what they're doing last season, what they did last season, what they're doing this season.
Well, to be fair, for you, it's a little bit easier because you, like, you cover, right? The only one team changes for you, right? Like, you have
multiple teams
to cover. You've got Willard every week, right? So it's easy. You get acclimated with doing Willard. I mean, I feel the same way. When I would do game prep for, like, 8-man football games or high school football games that I was doing on Fridays, like, I would put more game prep into that than I would doing my sideline reporting for the Northwest football team. Because my game notes would change a little bit for, like, the Northwest part, but I would really only have to do game notes for one team extensively. Right, so I would do, like, 3 hours worth of game prep for the high school football game I was doing on Friday, and then maybe an hour and a half, an hour and 45 minutes of game notes for the Northwest game that I was doing. Now, that first Northwest game I would do, 4, 4.5, 5 hours worth of game prep.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm going to spend the most time on my game notes for today, or for tomorrow's game, which is in Carl Junction.
Yeah, this week. And then a lot of that stuff can translate over into the next week.
Copy and paste, baby.
Yeah, the statistics and so on can sort of change a little bit, which, you know, when you're working with the same team every week, it's a lot easier to get statistics for your team. that's something that's going to be a lot of fun for me, is having to call coaches throughout the season and be like, hey, can you like
email me something?
Email me like some statistics for the season, so for you guys this year, so that I can, you know, put those into my broadcast and so on and so forth. And, you know, I've asked for that before and I've had coaches tell me no, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but yeah, it is what it is. So it's, I just don't get it. I don't understand. I feel like high school football is so important in the state of Missouri, and especially like the town that I grew up in, Lawson. It was a football town. It really was. I mean, it was one of those things, and it's very much that small town football stereotype where, like, Friday night, if you were to drive through Lawson at 6 o'clock, like an hour before kickoff, it is a ghost town. There's nobody in town. No cars are in town. Okay, the only people that are in town are either, like, you know, grabbing food from Subway or Sonic before they head to the game, or, you know, it's a bunch of guys that are hanging out at the bar. That, I mean, that's literally the only people in town, or people that are, like, working the gas stations. Everybody else was at the high school, at the football stadium, watching the game. I mean, a town of 2,500 people, and there were 2,000-plus at that football game any given Friday. That's just the way it was. Even if the team wasn't very good, you know, even if it was a team that was second round of districts, which I will say, our head football coach, Todd Dunn, just recently retired, did not have a single losing season his entire time he was there.
Wow.
Took the team to 3 state championships in 20 years. So, took the team to 3 state championships in 12 years, actually. 2003, 2007, and 2014. So, a lot of success for him, and a couple of state semifinal appearances as well. So, yeah. So, it's a school that has a lot of football success, and Valley Catholic is another one of those. Like, 15 state championships, and yet nobody's writing an article about them. Makes no sense to me.
It's because they're a private school. They don't want people talking about them. They want to be private.
I guess.
Corny dad joke there. All right, my therapy session Thursday. Before I get to that, I saw seen this post on MLB on their Instagram. Today's free games on MLB.tv, and it's basically just every game that's being played here. And I can't help but just laugh at the fact that it's MLB TV, in which if you're a fan of the Cardinals in Springfield, you can't even watch it. But hey, they're free for today, Logan. You can watch the Royals play the Mariners today on MLB.tv. And I can watch the Cardinals play the Pirates. Blackouts on MLB TV. What a joke. Ugh. Though that's what this world is turning into, is just a bunch of jokes. All right. Speaking of jokes, and I completely missed the trend here, because before I went to bed last night, you know how it is. You go to bed, but you don't fall asleep. You, like, go through all your socials before you go to sleep. Check
right.
Your Facebook, Twitter, your Instagram, whatever. I scrolled through Twitter last night looking for, like, the Lars Nootbaar walk-off hit that he had for the St. Louis Cardinals, along with other things. And literally in every comment section, every comment was, nah, he tweaking. Do you know about this trend?
He tweaking?
Every comment in every post that I saw was just full of, nah, he tweaking. Just that comment from multiple users.
I mean, I know what the term means. I guess I haven't seen that trend on the old Twittersphere yet.
Well, it's not Twitter, it's Instagram.
Oh, okay.
It was mostly just Instagram, but no, in every post, I'm going to try to find one here, if I can even find one here that's updated, but there'd be like a post where, be like, okay, you see the comments, you see the likes, in every comment, like top to bottom, nah, he tweaking, nah, he tweaking, nah, he tweaking. I legitimately thought, I was fooled by this, I thought Instagram got hacked. I thought some dude just came in and was just like, all right, I'm going to put this thing in where every comment that someone puts in here, it's just going to be nah, he tweaking.
He just auto-corrects to nah, yeah. He tweaking.
But no, it was an actual trend.
I don't know. I mean, I've seen that.
I don't get people. I legitimately don't hear 373 comments on this MLB post. In like the first 12, 13, 14, nah, he tweaking. Nah, he tweaking. Nah, he tweaking. And they're getting a bunch of likes and comments and everything. And the comments that are in the comments themselves are not he tweaking.
Yeah,
it's just this stupid trend that someone went on Instagram.
Is it like those? So what you're saying is that Instagram comment section looks like the TurboTax commercials, the free.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But no, it was just yesterday, and at first I was just like, all right, it's just some kind of sports thing. It's just like they're coming on sports pages. No, they commented on everything. Like, I follow a couple accounts that just cover, like, colleges or something like that. Like, I'll follow Missouri State and Mizzou on Instagram, and there'll be, like, 40 or 50 comments. Nah, he tweaking. What the hell is wrong with people, dude?
Like, yeah, that's weird.
It is weird. But, you know, thankfully that happened. I will be thankful for that because I honestly didn't have anything for therapy session Thursday. I was going to rail the Cardinals today if they lost to the Tigers, but they did not. So I just thought to myself, well, what am I going to talk about?
That's fair. Well,
thankfully, a bunch of internet trolls got me something to talk about. Those people were tweaking yesterday. Yeah, so the MLB section, comment section for the Lars Newt Bar walk-off, 19 hours ago, has over 1,000 comments.
That'd be a great name for a candy.
Newt Bar, exactly. They call them a candy bar for a reason.
Just call it the Lars Newt Bar.
Yeah, a Newt Bar.
If Lars Newt Bar becomes an all-star, you make a ton of money in St. Louis.
You know, I hope the hell he does, because the Cardinals need all-stars. They need all the help that they can get. But no, 1,000 comments in like the first 40, 50, 60 comments, all of them. Nah, he tweaking. Well, in that case, we need to tweak out for this Thursday edition of the Rookie Sports Report podcast here. No podcast tomorrow, of course, but we will be on Sports Talk from two different locations. So tune in for either good radio or radio that's so good it's bad, or so bad that it's good. Just have to wait and see. But that is in the future. Can't control the future, can't control the past, but we can control the now. And now it's time to end the Thursday edition of the Rookie Sports Report podcast. Logan, always a pleasure, and we'll do sports talk tomorrow, whether we like it or not.
Absolutely. We will do our best to put together a halfway decent show. It's going to be interesting. I'm going to be continuing to look at sports news throughout the day today and throw those into a Google Doc so that we've got plenty of stuff to talk about. And, you know, it's one of those things. I'm grateful that you're going to be on there with me via the phone, which is going to be difficult. It's going to be hard, you know, for you to, like, look up whatever it is we're talking about, which is going to suck.
I'll think of it. In my mind, just be like Ned Reynolds, just be a sports encyclopedia.
Gotta be. We're just hoping that, you know, you and I both, we're hoping that you've got decent cell phone service while you're on the highway, because...
And hopefully there's no road work.
That's about 44. My worst nightmare. It's going to be my worst nightmare tomorrow is we're in the middle of a segment or something and your call drops or something and we can't get you
back.
And
I can't get back on, yeah.
And I'm just scrambling to find stuff to talk about and doing a show by myself. What we may end up having to do is getting our producer, Abby Linton, to get on there and talk some sports and stuff with us so that, you know, I at least have somebody to talk to.
Yeah, she's well-versed in sports.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But, nah, that'll all unfold tomorrow, 4 to 6 Central Standard Time on ESPN The Jock, 4 to 6 p.m., not a.m., of course. I'm up at 4, but you're not, so.
I will not be.
Nah. And I myself could never do a show alone, especially at 4 a.m. All right. That's enough mumbling and jumbling for today. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.